No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So you should feel free to call in and talk to me and Maria at 888-627-6008 or post a question to our chat box. Maria.
Yes, good evening. Michael. Good evening to you. You sound like you're full of spunk. How are you?
I'm full of spunk. Well, you know, I've had better days. My football team lost another game, and Mrs. Brown and I tried to be plumbers this week, and you know, we tried everything, and unfortunately, we don't know what we're doing. So
that's why you leave it to the professionals.
I know, you know, but the older I get, the cheaper I get. You know, and I figure I can do it myself.
Well, and the prices keep going up, of course. So you're a fan of that Washington team, I take it.
Yeah, I have been since I was a little boy.
Oh, how great for you to have that. And I read an amazing article about this woman that they hired a couple months ago that's helping them with diversity and inclusion and the sexual harassment allegations. And she just sounds fabulous.
Well, and you know what? Today was a historic game in that one of the referees, one of the 10 people on the field was a woman. So, and that's a new phenomenon. I guess there are some of them that have been on the football field before as line judges and things like that. But this was a referee, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, but they kept on making an issue out of the fact that, you know, it was a big deal for her to be the head person on the field today. And of course we all focused on that because our team was doing such a miserable job. You know, the problem with the Washington football team right now is like they're almost there. You know what I mean? They're playing a good game, but then they're getting beat because they're not quite there, and it's frustrating. But yeah.
Women in the NFL makes me so happy because I love football and always have. I've been an NFL fan since I was, I don't know, in the second grade. And I remember the AFL and the NFL.
AFL, that's right.
And my family, we always went to Mass on Sunday and then would come back and have brunch. And then my dad, kickoff was at 1 o'clock in Los Angeles if the game wasn't blacked out. And for people who are younger than us, that they used to black out home games if there weren't enough tickets sold. So it was to encourage people to buy tickets, and then they would show it to the locals. And I would sit in this cigar-filled room with all of my dad's buddies and me and watch the game. So I've known the game for decades, right? Fast forward, all these pre-games and halftime shows, I don't think there's ever a woman, you know, with Howie Long and Terry Bradshaw and all of those guys talking. And it's like, I feel like I'm in a guy's locker room and they're not talking to me. And I'm not about tokenism. But if I know football as well as I do, surely there are other women that know football better than me and that would be an equal on those teams of five guys.
And you know what?
I'm glad to hear that they're breaking through that ceiling.
Well, I had one right here in Washington. Her name was Leslie Zarniak, and she just had an encyclopedic knowledge of football. She was a local broadcaster. She married somebody famous. I can't even remember who it was now, a few years ago, maybe an athlete, but
But again, on the local level, not on
local
the national
level. That's right. And
yeah.
I remember when they came out with the first women spokespeople in football.
And
they
were
more
always,
like they
the
were more
arm
like
charms.
Spokesmodels.
Yes.
You know?
The pretty
right?
girls on the sidelines
right.
with
right.
the cleavage and not dressed
right.
professionally. And
right.
yeah, and I'm like, no. I like to look at good looking people, men and women, don't get me wrong. But not, you know, I don't need to see your arms and your cleavage and your curly hair and stuff like that. Let's just talk sports.
Yeah. Miss America was one. What was her name? I can't remember now. Oh, God, I'm getting so old. But yeah, there were so many that were on the sidelines. And let me tell you why I'm a Washington football fan, because when I was 12 years old, my father took me into a bar, which he used to do in those days, right? You could walk into a bar with a 12-year-old, you know, as long as I didn't drink. And I saw a guy who was kind of half in the bag. He was fat, and he was kind of stumbling towards the door. And my father said, "That's one of the world's greatest athletes."
Oh.
And I'm like, "What?" And it was Sonny Jurgensen.
I
watched him the following week, and I saw him throw a 60-yard pass, like out of shoestring, to this guy named Charlie Taylor, who ran down the sidelines and scored. And I was hooked from then on. I was just hooked. I was like, I can't believe this guy, you know. And it's funny because Sonny, who became a local broadcaster, lost like 40 pounds when he left the NFL. He got into shape after he left football.
Wow.
But he was an amazing passer and an amazing quarterback. And, you know, and I just got hooked from then on. And
I don't blame you. That's, you know, your hometown now. And I was the same with the Los Angeles Rams until they left to St. Louis. And then I could not be a fan of theirs forever. And people were like, "Get over it, Miranda." It's like, nope.
Yeah,
you have left me.
Well, you know, and it bothers me that I turn on the TV and I see the quarterback and I have no idea who it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That back in the day when we had Sonny Jurgensen every year for many years, and then we had Billy Kilmer, and then we had, you know, it's like you knew all the players, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, who are these guys? They're new every year. They're people don't go. And that's in basketball, too. They don't go to one team and stay for one team forever
right.
and ever, you know. So
but I
different.
Hear the owner of the Washington team is quarantined with COVID.
He is?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I didn't hear that, but.
And when are they going to choose a name, and how are they going to go about it?
Let me say, for the world to hear, the man is a putz. He's a part of the problem for the Washington Redskins is that we have an owner, Dan Schneider, who's not, you know, he's not a good football team owner. He's, I think the Washington team, the name, the Washington team was a cop out, you know.
Well, I thought it was just a temporary marker. I assume they're going to name it something.
Well, I think it is a temporary marker. And I say that's why I think it's a cop-out, is that they had an opportunity to rename the team and they put it on hold, you know. And it's just a placeholder. I think you're right. It is a temporary marker. And soon they will pick a name. There were a lot of names. You know, our baseball team used to be called the Washington Senators, so that was my favorite pick.
Of course.
Senators. But, yeah, there are a lot of good names out there. I like the Washington Monuments. I don't know.
That's not a bad one either.
Yeah, it's not
so
a bad one.
They're quarantining he and his wife because they were exposed to somebody who had COVID. Mm-hmm. So they say it's the first game that he didn't attend in 21 years was today.
Well,
so I
didn't
clarify myself there.
I was wallowing in my misery over
my Rams lost too, so
play.
Yeah, 3 points. Yeah.
You know, look, you get, as a Washington fan, you get used to losing. You know, they had a history that's gone up and down and up and down. So we've snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, many times. Well, let's talk about some of the things that we need, you know.
Yes. And if you don't mind, I'd love to lead with Amy Coney Barrett's nomination yesterday. And I want to say this as a tribute to your wife, Mrs. Brown. I watched it live. I set my alarm so that I could see the announcement live. I've never done that before. And I was crying during it because she has lived the life that I had hoped that I could live. And your wife has lived that life, a successful marriage, a family, and a career. And I haven't had all of those things. And when I looked at this woman, Judge Barrett, I thought, wow, usually they say God doesn't give everything to everyone. Well, it seems like this woman sure has it, graduating first in her class from Notre Dame University Law School and being hailed by both Democrats and Republicans for her brilliant legal mind. I've heard Democrats coming out, not necessarily political Democrats, but Democrats who are learned and scholarly and stuff. And they're saying she is the right person for the job. And when she said yesterday, I love the United States of America and I love our Constitution, I felt like she will be able to check her religion and her beliefs at the door and don that robe and do what Supreme Court justices are supposed to do, interpret the law.
Well, let me ask you, though, what do you think about the fact that you have Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Tom Cotton, Republican after Republican, that said in 2016 that a nominee shouldn't be put up for confirmation within 9 months of a election, and now they're willing to do it within, 6 weeks of an election? What do you think of that?
I think it's reprehensible.
Yeah, me too. And this has nothing to say about her qualifications. Now, she's way too conservative for me. But I don't expect the Republican Party or Donald Trump in particular to put up a liberal justice. I mean, it's not like I think they're out of line in proposing this woman. But I got a few problems with her opinions. I don't understand why she thinks if you've served time in jail, you deserve to own a gun, but you shouldn't be allowed to vote. Mm-hmm. Don't understand a few of those positions. But the thing that bothers me most is the way they're going about it.
Yes.
It's not that she's a surprise pick. She's been on a lot of people's short lists.
Yes.
And the things that you point out, she was an amazing scholar. There are people that have worked with her over the years that just have lots of wonderful things to say about her. So, I don't necessarily feel that she's she's not somebody I would have chosen. But then again, the choice wasn't up to me, and it's not up to liberals. It's up to a more conservative government. And I understand why they put her forth. I just wish this is the worst kind of political hypocrisy to me.
Yes.
You've got Lindsey Graham out there saying, and if we do this, if Trump's in his final year, I mean, it's almost like you couldn't write this stuff, right?
Right. And he says, Trump, you can, right. Yeah, I'm on record and you can.
Right. I'm on record. You can use it against me. Yeah. And it is going to be used against him. Let me tell you.
But it's not going to stop it. That's the thing is it's hypocrisy.
It's not going to stop it.
But yeah, they're going to. And I think they're going to push it through, frankly.
I think they are too, in terms of, I don't know if they'll do it prior to the election because of the time frame. Mm-hmm. This is all going to start on October 12th.
Right.
So even if it took a week for the confirmation hearings,
it has to be 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, you'll be a week or so out from the election, and I don't know if they'll have time to do it. They certainly would have time to do it in the lame duck session if they don't have time to do it prior.
Prior, right.
And I got to think, if I was on the campaign staff of the president, I'd be screaming at him, no, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, it's crazy. because I think this is going to really be the president shooting himself in the foot. And he's this, when the whole thing is over, I think we're going to look back on this and see it as a turning point. Because look, they're going to put up a woman. The biggest lead that Joe Biden has right now is among women. And they're going to put up a woman who's an anti-abortion person, and they're going to allow the Democrats to torture her for 2 weeks in public prior to the election. And I think that's just, I think that's crazy. You've said it. I've said it. We've had Republicans on the show who have said it. Get abortion out of the Republican platform.
Correct.
It keeps it right. And you know what? This has given them the opportunity to go and just, you know, put this woman out there and beat her up for 2 weeks. And you can bet the Democrats are going to do that.
Well, it's a delicate balance, too, because if it's perceived that they're beating up with her, and to that point, once Dianne Feinstein grilled her in 2017, apparently her comment about the dogma lives loudly within you or something to that effort rallied other people to say that she was being pillared because of her religion, not because of what she did. Like John Kennedy, when he was running for office, they said that he was going to answer to the Pope. If you recall, the comments were because he was a Roman Catholic. And he was like, No.
Well, that's a different
nothing
time.
To do with it.
I think Catholics have become a lot more mainstream since then. But
well, and by and large, Catholics tend to be liberal.
Yeah, and you know what?
Look at the Jesuits, for starters.
Jesuits are bad, bad dudes. Let me tell you something. I would take 6 Jesuits and put them up against the Hell's Angels any day. And I'd stand behind the Jesuits.
And that's why people say Catholics are conservative. Yes, there are conservative Catholics, but I'm a very liberal Catholic.
Plenty of liberal.
Children say to me, Mom, how can you claim you're a Catholic? And I said, why? I am. You know, I'm a cradle Catholic. And they're like, you believe that priests should get married. You believe that priests should be gay. You believe that in the right to choice. You believe. And I was like, I do. And they said, well, that's not what the Catholic Church says. And I said, yes, but I also have my own mind.
Yeah, of course. And many Catholics are like that. You know, the Catholic Church, and I don't know if the Catholics still believe this because, you know, I was born and raised a Catholic, but then the Episcopals kidnapped me.
Yes,
but
just not too far away.
No, my grandmother used to call them Catholic light.
Yes.
But, you know, they don't believe in birth control, or didn't for many, many years. And let me tell you, never met a Catholic woman that didn't practice birth control. You know, never met one that said they didn't believe in birth control. So, I think there are a lot of liberal Catholics out there. And
My children went to Catholic school, and I, having 4 children, my family was one of the largest. Most of them had 2, maybe 3. And that's our generation. So, I mean, when I went to school, I don't know what it was like with you, but I went to school with 5, 7, 9, 11, 14 children. And I came from a family of 4 children. I used to apologize and hang my head and rub my toe in the sand when people would ask me, how many kids in your family? And I'd say, only 4.
Yeah, I was that was me too. I was from a family of 3, and I just thought it was, you know, I was from the smallest family. I lived in a Catholic neighborhood and, you know, had the Hansons who lived 2 doors away. They had 13.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lots of families, 5, 6, 7, 8 kids.
All my friends.
Yeah.
The closest us was 5, and the rest were 9, 11, 14. And that's what I thought was normal. And I'd be hanging out at their house, if you can imagine, like they needed more kids.
Well, you know, and as far as religion goes, Catholicism, I still hang on to a lot of the vestiges of Catholicism. It's the perfect religion for a politician because, you know, politicians, they all want to, always want to lobby. They always want to inside track. They always want, well, the Catholics have all that down, right? Because we have a saint that's in charge of everything. So, right? So you got a lost cause, you pray to St. Jude. You got a problem with your house, you pray to St. Joseph. Oh, yes. I should do that about the plumbing. You
yes.
got to, you know... We've got a person in charge of it. You know, it's
the
like
patron saint of lost articles is Saint Anthony. How many times did you pray to him?
Saint Anthony, all the time. And Saint yes. Anthony is my patron saint.
We
have to choose a saint, right?
At confirmation.
I got to tell you a great story. You know, I suffer from a terrible inferiority complex because I grew up in an Italian neighborhood and my grandparents were Italian. But my name was Brown, and I had blue eyes and light hair and, you know, light skin. And I always so desperately wanted to be Italian. So it comes time to choose a patron saint, and I choose Saint Dominic, who is this Italian saint who's martyred at a very early age. He dies in his 20s, and he's this martyr, and he's like a cross between James Dean and, you know, so I choose him. And my mother says to me, because he's a crazy Italian lady, no, I promised you to St. Anthony the day you were born. So I'm like, no, I don't want St. Anthony. Finally, my brother says to me, Michael, he's Italian. St. Anthony, how many kids do you know in the neighborhood named Tony? I thought about it. I said, yeah. So I started referring to him as St. Tony. When people would ask me, they say, my patron saint is St. Tony. Used to drive my mother crazy.
Well,
she would say, you know, he's not a kid out on the playground. He's a saint.
And Saint Dominic, though, was Castilian, and he is the patron saint of astronomers.
Yeah. I was 12. What the hell did I know?
You would have covered all your bases.
Yeah, Castile. That's close enough to Italy.
Yes, it is indeed.
So I chose somebody that looked Italian to me, who you're right, Ashley was not, but Saint Anthony's been a good.
So we should also set the record straight because there's rumors going around that Amy Coney Barrett belongs to something, and I don't know what you would call it without it being pejorative. So I would say a sect of the Catholic Church that's called People of Praise, which was only founded in 1971. But this Hulu series that's on now called The Handmaid's Tale, which is about prosecution of women in Juliet, it's fiction, right?
My wife's addicted.
Okay, yeah. I can't watch it. The whole thought of it just makes me nauseous. Yeah. But the woman who wrote the book, Margaret Atwood, in 1985, and then was the genesis for the series, they said that the People of Praise is what inspired it. And she's come on the record and said, no, there is another sect in Catholicism called People of Hope. And that is actually what was part of her inspiration for The Handmaid's Tale. So, because I heard as recently as Friday that Amy Coney Barrett belonged to this thing within the Catholic Church where they flog themselves and, you know, Dan Brown, the Da Vinci Code and all of that stuff.
Yeah, well, and you talk about Dan Brown. I mean, you know, Opus Dei and, you know, there's always been conspiracy theories about the Catholic Church. And it goes way back. And, you know, I mean, the Medicis were not nice people. And, you know, there's a lot of things in the in Catholicism. They weren't very nice to Galileo or Tycho or, you know, they were always.
Or to the Native American.
Or Joan of, you know, Joan of Arc. You know, but, yeah, and that's one of the problems with the internet, and you and I both know it, that they can take half-truths and spin them into, you know, whatever they want. And every good lie, every single good lie, it has an element of truth to it,
right,
or you can't sell it, you know. There's got to be some element to truth, so...
So along those lines, there is a Netflix documentary, and it's called The Social Dilemma. And it's I just watched it yesterday because it was brought up to me five times last week, including through my PhD studies, that it's about what the Google and Facebook and Pinterest and Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, what they do to create addiction in the user and the algorithms and the artificial intelligence that goes into it. And they interview the mostly men who were somewhat founders or CEOs or whatever and talk about that. And they talk about when you look for news based on your searches, they throw the news feed into you that validates that which you already feel, so that then you think that that's what the world thinks. And it's in psychology, it's called confirmation bias. You seek that which you know to be true. And they kind of break it down. It's fascinating. It's only 90 minutes. I strongly recommend it.
Well, you know, you and I have talked about this on the show. I truly believe in that. I believe that people don't look for the truth. I think they look for things that support what they already believe. And, you know, again, the internet, you can find something for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's, no matter what you believe, I don't care if you believe the world is flat, there are still people out there.
Climate change is a hoax. And you can find that too. Or COVID is a hoax. You can find that too. It exists. And so they deliberately prey on people's, what do you want to say, vulnerabilities, and then actually reinforce it. So they're creating the monsters. In other words, people are emboldened where they wouldn't be if they didn't think that other people thought like them. So it's a tribe herd mentality. And social media is helping making that possible and monetizing it. That's how they're worth all those billions.
I think that, again, when history is written about Donald Trump, that will be a central theme of his popularity. I think that there are many people out there, and this is something that I don't think the Democrats fully understand, which is that there are plenty of people out there that feel that they've been abused and maligned.
And
so they want somebody that's going to throw their, you know, they sabotage. They want somebody that's going to throw their shoes into the machinery, somebody that's going to shake things up in Washington. They're willing to take a chance on anybody because they're tired of being talked down to. They're tired of feeling that, you know, they're not contributing. You know, there's got to be a realignment in America. And I'm about to speak at an international conference on Thursday, and I just found out that one of the other speakers is going to be the Secretary General of the United Nations. But on my panel...
Oh, my gosh. How exciting.
Yeah, and on my panel is the former president of Ecuador and me and some other, let's see, who else is going to be there? The prime minister of Belgium and the minister of state for Albania and me. And we're going to be moderated by a guy from Harvard Kennedy School of Politics. But that's what my issue is going to be. It's going to be, how do we build a collective will to change what's going to happen in the future based on what's going on now? How do we refocus the world's attention on things like global climate change, as opposed to being focused on their own the populist movements that we see around the world in places like the United States, England, and India? How do we change the focus from it being all about us, America first, America only, to being, let's be participants in a greater world? Because I think that's what we need to do to move us forward. So that's going to be a challenge. I'm working on it. Maybe next week I'll have some brilliant insights into it, I hope.
I hope so, too. Thank you for sharing that. Congratulations,
well,
too.
Well, yeah, it's just, I love this organization. This organization is called Horses, and it brings people together from around the world to talk about everything from international politics to how to what the feng shui in your office should be. Okay. You know, and cultural things that try to bring us closer together and push the understanding that there's a baseline where we're all the same and where we can all cooperate to make a better world. Sometimes the New York Times referred to the organization as the Junior League of International Politics. You know, we all want to hug each other and sing Kumbaya.
Nice.
But right. And that's a great starting place. You know, these people aren't trying to rule the world. They're just trying to bring people closer together and have a closer understanding with each other. So I think it's a really important organization.
Sort of like what you and I talk about with our relationship is that when people don't have to worry about the others or the differences and can realize that there's more that is the same than it is not, then I think that helps people put their guard down and try to work collaboratively and as a community and as a global world instead of you, them, us, they, that sort of boundaries, if you will, that exist, but not necessarily philosophically.
Well, and you know what? It builds a mutual respect. You know, when you and I have a difference of opinion, I respect your opinion because I see you as a good person that wants to be helpful and make a better world. So I see it as a difference in philosophy, but not our core values are so much the same. And I think we could say that about everybody in the world. And that's what we have to build on, right? We have to things like children. You know, we all love our children. I don't care what country you come from. You know, there are certain basic things that we all agree on. And when you can accept those things and you see people as having good character and you trust them, then the discussions become so much more productive than when you immediately suspect them of something. Mm-hmm. You know, the new Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, because she's this or that, you know, rather than saying, this is somebody I should look at. This is somebody I should think about. If I don't agree with you, that's one thing. But I don't think there's any malfeasance in your decision to support her, if that's what you want to do. I trust you, and I think of you as a good person. And I think we need to build more of that around the world. I think we have a distrust of so many people when they really just have a difference of opinion. And again, it's a problem with the Democrats, you know, that we say, you know, I mean, you know, Joe Biden let it slip a few weeks ago where he said, you know, if you're an African American and you support Donald Trump, you're not black.
Right.
I think, you know, we have those prejudices that we feel like, you know, we're so right and we're not willing to accept other people for their honest feelings, and then we write them off, you know. So I think that's important.
Well, and speaking of Biden, they say that there's some grumblings within the Democrats that he's keeping it too low key, and that he isn't. I mean, when I see him speak, he's saying all the right things, but I wish he was more passionate and charismatic than he is. I think he could whip up a little bit more support if he was, you know, bigger than just the dogmatic statements that he makes, which makes sense. But they say he made 12 visits outside of Delaware, and there were 22 days when he didn't make any public appearances or he only held virtual fundraisers. And then Trump has had 24 trips that took him to 17 states. And the Democrat leader of Texas for the party said that his not traveling is hurting them. We need him here in Texas and Arizona to boost the Latino turnout and not to focus so much on Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but I mean, come on, man. There's less, you know, just over 30 days. Now's the time to make the push.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts. And the first thought is one of the first rules I learned in politics is never shoot a man that's trying to hang himself. I think the best thing the Democratic Party has going for it is Donald Trump. I think the more Donald Trump gets out there, the more damage he does to himself. And I think that's part of their philosophy. But also, I think that it's part of who he is. I don't think he's that, you know, he's not Dr. King. That's not how he speaks. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He worked for Obama, who was also very, played it close to the vest. So I think that's part of who he is. And I think that that criticism of somebody like the guy from Texas, I think it must be frustrating for them, you know, because they do want him to come out. They do want him to fight. They do want him to stand up. And we'll see what happens in the debates.
Tuesday. We should tell everybody that. So it's 6 p.m. Pacific. I guess that's 9 p.m. Eastern.
9 p.m., yeah.
So that will be interesting. A friend of mine was saying that Biden should just call him Donald.
Well,
and not
we'll
Mr.
see.
President or something, just to get under his skin, because you know that would really irk him.
you know what? That I got to tell you, I've been in many debates, you know, running for public office, and those are the easiest guys to debate, the ones that you can get under their skin.
Yeah.
And you know, but I don't know if you've been watching the news today, Maria, but did you see the this is going to be a big issue. The New York Times is reporting that 10 out of 15 years between 2000 and 2015, Donald Trump paid no federal income taxes at all. And that in 2016, he paid $750. Now, this is what I mean by
because of all of his losses.
Yeah, but who knows why? We can't see his tax returns, but I don't think that's going to play well. I don't think it's going to play well that you've got a guy who professes to be a billionaire out there saying he hasn't paid taxes. In addition, or having the New York Times say he hasn't paid taxes. Now, his base will believe that that's false news and it won't affect them at all. But you
I don't
know,
think his base cares one bit.
They don't care one bit.
Not that's why when you say about, you know, don't shoot a man who's committing suicide, there's nothing he can do that is going to affect his base. It's only the Democrats and the independents and the decline to state that need to get enraged and vote, because his base isn't going to waver.
And Republicans. Look, if Republicans do for him what the Democrats did for Hillary Clinton, he's in a lot of trouble. You know, there were a lot of African Americans that didn't come out and vote for Hillary Clinton. They just stayed home. And I think you're going to see a lot of middle of the road Republicans, people that would vote for Mitt Romney, for example, that may do the very same thing. They may stay home. They may say, I can't bring myself to vote for a Democrat, but I'm not going to vote for him.
Well, there's always abstaining and then down voting, down ballot voting.
Well, that's right. But people don't do that, you know, as a rule. They don't do that when they stay home. Look, when I worked for Jimmy Carter, and my job on election night was to post the results. Well, by the end of the evening, we didn't even care that Jimmy Carter lost. We had no feeling about it at all because we lost the Senate. We lost the House. We lost lots of governorships because people that didn't come out and vote for Carter just didn't come out and vote. And that's going to be a problem. And look, these guys, the Republican Party right now is in a lot of trouble. And I think that's why so many Republicans, we've had them on the show, are supporting Biden, because they're trying to save their party. They're trying to show, you know, they've got trouble in Iowa. It looks like Ernst is going to lose. Maine, Collins is certainly going to lose.
Really?
Yeah. No, she's like
Even though she came out about not voting for a Supreme Court justice or
Yeah, too little, too late, I think. And, you know, the thing about Collins, too, since we tried to pressure her into to being our first Republican, we followed her wrist very closely. The needle on her really hasn't moved. You know, the she's been at 43% since like February. But the Democrats have been moving up and up and up. Lindsey Graham is behind. Tillis in North Carolina is behind. We have a special election in Arizona, which looks good for the Democrat. So it looks like at the end of the day, the Republicans are going to lose five seats, and that'll put them in the minority.
Wow.
Yeah. And wow. I think since we started out talking about Amy Coney Barrett, I think that she may be seen in the long run as one of the best things that's happened to D.C. statehood in years.
What makes you say that?
Because the deal is that we passed D.C. statehood in the House of Representatives.
Uh-huh.
We're now in the Senate. We need 60 votes in the Senate to pass the legislation, and the president would have to sign it. But if the Democrats take over the Senate and Joe Biden wins, then I think what I will do is go to Capitol Hill and make the argument that, you know, for years we fought this on the basis that it's the right thing to do. We can change our tack now and say, hell yes, the Republicans are right. It's all about getting two more Democrats in the United States Senate, and we ought to do it. Because look what they just did in the Supreme Court. And we can do that if we do a thing called the nuclear option and we suspend the filibuster. We suspend the rules, get rid of the filibuster, and all we need is 51 votes. But, you know, that's only been done twice because senators hesitate to do that because it's so partisan. It's so obviously partisan, right? Mm-hmm. But I think if we go up there and say, look, it's time to be obviously partisan. The Republicans were obviously partisan when they confirmed this new justice to the Supreme Court. And damn it, yes, let's get two more Democrats in the United States Senate.
Uh-huh.
They're even talking now about changing the size of the court.
Yes, and I've heard that. And well, there's some compelling arguments behind that, too.
And it's been done. You know that the court was five people at one time. They reduced it to four people at one time. They moved it up. I don't know how long it's been nine people ever since I've known the Supreme Court. It's been nine people. But yeah, and they've done this before. John Adams appointed Justice Marshall, who became, one of the, John Marshall became the Chief Justice and really shaped the court in a lot of ways. But he appointed him after he was defeated by Thomas Jefferson because Jefferson hated him, hated Marshall. And so Adams put him in there, at, you know, after he was a lame duck. Actually, you know, lost the election. So it's not that this is...
It's not cast in stone, and it's not cast in the Constitution. It's decided by Congress.
Right.
It's decided so, by but it's been since 1869 that there have been nine justices. So there's quite the precedent. But to your point... It's not cast in stone.
It's not
fluid. And it would make sense if you think about it. Our population has grown exponentially since 1869, and we have the same number of justices since then. Probably it's time.
Yeah. And you know what could help make that happen? Two more Democrats. And I think You know, I use the analogy of Harley Davidson, and this is something that you'll appreciate because you are a Harley owner. And that is that Harley almost went out of business, and they were bought by AMF. Do you remember this? The people that make bowling balls and pool tables bought the Harley Davidson company, and they tried to turn it into motorcycle riding was a family event. They did all these ads with, like, children on the back of your Harley and, you know, and the whole family going out and having a picnic on their Harleys. And it was a disaster. And what happened was the people that originally started Harley Davidson, their family bought the business back, and they embraced their bad boy image. They started making all these Harleys that were on the same platform. There really were only two varieties of Harleys, and that was, you know, the big Harleys and the Sportsters, the more than narrow frame Harleys. But they had a dozen different versions where they, you know, they customized them all, right? They had a street rod and you know them all. Yeah. And as soon as they embraced their bad boy image, they became a super success story around the world. And that's what I think the statehood people need to do. They need to embrace their bad boy image and say, yes, we are trying to pack the United States Senate. You know, the hell with all this being, political, you know, fair and just. And, right. Let's just be unabashed about it. And you know, they say that's one of the indications that you're crazy, that you keep on doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yes.
Right. And that's what we do. We go out there and we say, it's not nice to take our vote away. It's unfair to treat us this way. This isn't how the country was founded. And everybody's like, yeah, whatever. You know, we got problems in California. We've got forest fires and other things to deal with. We have problems in Ohio. We have problems in Louisiana and, you know, with hurricanes. We don't need to worry about D.C. statehood. So, you know, let's be unabashed about it. Let's be, you know, mercenary about it. I'm all for that.
Well, and to your point about Harley Davidson, do you have In-N-Out by you on the East Coast?
In-N-Out, what's that?
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, okay. So In-N-Out is a hamburger chain. So it must
I've heard about it. But
okay.
We don't have them.
Yeah, I think they went into Texas recently, but so it must be just like Midwest to the Pacific Ocean. And it is a drive-through mostly. They do have some dine-in, and all they serve is hamburgers and French fries and milkshakes. That's all they serve, and that's all they've ever served, and that's all they'll continue to serve because that's what their brand is. They're not going to add chicken, and they're not going to add breakfast, and they're not going to add, you know, all those things that McDonald's does and whatever. And they say because they have stayed true to their brand, that's why there's a line every time you go to one, because that people know what to expect, and they get what they expect.
Yeah.
And nothing is frozen, and et cetera. So to your point about Harley Davidson, when you deviate from what it is that meant to people, and not every Harley owner is a bad boy, you and me included in that statement. But yeah, there is that image of the open road and the free spirit,
right,
if you will. Somebody right. who thinks on their own.
Right. Right. And who wants to pretend to be a bad boy on the weekend? Right?
Yeah. All those white collar people.
I go to Rolling Thunder. This is a real story. I went to Rolling Thunder maybe 10 years ago when I first started, and there was a guy on the right of me that was an orthodontist, okay? Mm-hmm. And he had call waiting on his motorcycle. And he also had a thing in his saddlebag, mm-hmm, that he could, and he pushed a button and a latte popped, like a coffee mug popped up, you know? And on the other side was a guy that had a Harley that was held together with baling wire, you know? He had a squat stick on one arm and, you know, had just gotten out of prison. So this was, you know, this was the kind of people we had there. We had, mm-hmm. you know, the real honest to God bikers, and then, you know, the guy with the latte and the call waiting was a sheriff from
Southern. Yeah, a lot of law enforcement.
Yeah,
I mean, when I went Southern to Sturgis, Maryland. The second time I went to Sturgis, I was in a group of 10, and 8 of them were LAPD motorcycle cops.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, they go on a lot of rides and stuff. And, you know, and that's one of the funny things, too. I don't want to digress too much here, but coming down Route 70, which is what we do, we assemble at a motorcycle place, and then, you know, like thousands of us pour into the city while the motorcycle cops shut down the you know.
Nice. That's right. So much fun.
Down,
yeah.
Right. They shut down the highway. But these guys come by you in their Harleys and they're doing 120 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's
you're
not
doing good. You're doing 60 and they're just flying, you know. So they're exercising their bad boy genes, you know. But you know, I think it's time that we embraced.
But talk about brands. You know that Uncle Ben's has changed their name to Ben's Original.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing.
And Aunt Jemima is her picture is being dropped from the syrup packages, and mm-hmm. Eskimo Pie is going to change their name in the marketing.
I didn't even know you could buy Eskimo Pies anymore. They used to be my favorite.
Yeah. And so, and then there's something called Geechee Boy Mill that makes grits, and they're changing their name because Geechee is a dialect spoken by descendants of African American slaves. And so of course, the Redskins, as we mentioned, has been dropped, and that's because of FedEx, Nike, Pepsi, and Bank of America providing pressure, which I so approve of. That, you know, if you're not going to be responsible, we're going to make you responsible. We're going to hold your feet to the fire, or we're not going to sell your merchandise through our stores or whatever. It's about time that corporate America, and now, I don't know if you know, Michael, there are a lot of firms, and that's what the Washington team did, is they're hiring people, and it's called diversity, equity, and inclusion to run their organizations to make sure that there's diversity within, not only on the board, but the directors, the employees, the leaders, the, you know, whatever, so that people can look around and see who they are, not just some white tower. And I know you're a white guy, and I hope you don't take offense at that, but America is diverse. And I believe that we're enriched by diversity. And the more that we embrace our diverse roots, the better the productivity. And the better you are to your people, the better your people are to you. And I don't mean that pejoratively, but, you know, those in the cause or those in the rank and file or those as employees. There's a company out called A Great Place to Work, and they've been around for 25 years. And they prove year after year after year, the more you give, the more you get. So,
that's the thing. That's going to be central to what I talk about at this international conference, you know, because Aunt Jemima and all the other Uncle Ben's and all these people that you've talked about, they're not doing it out of the kindness of their heart. They're doing it because they see that not doing it will affect their business. And that's what my point will be, that business can take the lead.
Yes.
When we stop seeing foreigners like the Chinese and the Indians as competitors, and we start seeing them as customers, then that changes the whole perspective, right? There's that old saying that you don't bite the hand that feeds you. Mm-hmm. And when we start seeing them as potential customers, here's another. You know, I hate to keep on coming back to the Harley example, but I go to India last year, and I'm at a international conference there, and I notice I'm in a city, Hyderabad, 7 million people. There are motorcycles
everywhere.
Yep. And I see Royal Enfield, I see Triumph, I see Suzuki, I see Honda, I see all the motorcycles, you know, but I see no Harley Davidson. So I come to, I'm at this conference, and who do I meet? I meet the woman who's in charge of Harley-Davidson India. And I say, why are there no Harley-Davidsons? Well, there's a lot of reasons. There's high tariffs and all sorts of other things. But she says, we've only been in India for a handful of years. And I'm like, what? How can it be that the largest motorcycle manufacturer in America doesn't market to a country that has over a billion people, almost all of whom ride motorcycles? You know,
well, so, I would argue that they're not, Harleys are not as nimble as most of those other brands named. And I've been in
more expensive.
And I've seen the five people on one bike.
Right. And you can buy five of those mopeds for what one Harley Davidson costs. But you also understand that they're prestigious, and they're more prestigious overseas than they are here in the United States. So there would be a marketplace for them. And I think that's what.
Well, they must recognize that, or else she wouldn't have the position that she does.
That's right. Finally, they have recognized it. Exactly. Yes. And we need more companies to do that, to see, you know, we need more things like the coming together of Oracle and TikTok. And that's a horrible place to leave our show, but we're running out of time. So any last remarks there, Maria?
Other than our guest last week, Words on Fire, Helio Fred Garcia, I've gotten so many comments about that conversation. Yeah. And so if our listeners, if you didn't catch it, it's available to download on demand. He talked about the 12 forms of speech that the Nazis used and the Rwandans used with their genocide, and that President Trump uses all 12. Was he an eye opener for me. Just that man knows what he's doing, President Trump. He's
well,
not just
right.
some he might
right.
be a fool on Twitter, but not when he speaks.
Right. And you know what? I had comments too. The most poignant one was text to me by a friend of mine that said she listened to the show and it scared the life out of her.
Yeah.
And that's what she said. I'm so scared after listening to your show. Listen to your show tonight and it gave me a stomach ache. Oh. I hope we're not doomed. So, yes, listen to that show. It's a good one. And we'll have a guest for you again next week, I'm pretty sure. We're working on some people. And it's getting tougher and tougher because the election's going on.
Of course.
But thank God for Maria.
That
makes our show interesting. And I thought of a zillion songs that we could play tonight.
I can't imagine.
I've gone back to an old standard, my hippie days. When I was sitting around pondering the problems of the world with no money and no insight.
And lots of hair,
having a good time. Here's one I dedicated to all the people in America. Here's Buffalo Springfield with For What It's Worth. We'll see you next week, Maria.
And thank you for listening. We really appreciate the privilege that you make time in your week to hear what it is that we have to say.
Absolutely.
There's something happening. Representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people